It's haunting and it's lyrical. It's the After the Buzzer theme. Maybe we should have more subdued music this time because it's going to be something of an intervention. This edition of the big show. Welcome. My name is Mike Gross, and I will be sort of in the psychiatrist role in this edition of the big show because we're going to talk to two. E.T., are you a co-owner of the Packers? A part owner?
Sure am. Got the certificate, 2 years ago or whenever they did that.
Boom. So we're talking to two part owners of the Green Bay Packers about the departure of Aaron Rodgers and what it all means and how they feel about it. That's the theme of today's show, at least at the outset. Our guest is Eric Thomas, an old friend of ours from media activities around these parts.
Activities being a very broad term.
And now he's out, you're no longer around these parts. Is that right, E.T.?
That is correct. I'm in the Steel City. Yeah. Moving to the Mount Lebanon area. And, we'll see what happens. I'm looking to maybe get back into some stuff here in the fall. We'll see what discussions we have. Oh. But, right now it's just more like crying in my beer the last couple days.
Okay. All right. Well, try not to actually cry during the show. Maybe you should. Maybe we need that raw emotion. Anyway, let's start with this. This will be sort of straightforward. Do you guys feel like the Packers won the trade? E.T., what do you think?
I do. Had they done this 2 years ago when he was coming off an MVP season and they were, 3 minutes away from going to the Super Bowl, I think they could have got just a ridiculous haul for him. But, look, worst case scenario, if the Jets, if he plays, say, 50% of the snaps and not 65%, they still have a number two pick out of it. If he's 65% of the snaps, they got they got an extra number one, and that's what they wanted. So, to me, right there, it's a win. And worst case, they got two picks in the second round. They've excelled at picking guys below the first round in their history. So, and they get rid of the money next year too. That's the big part.
Cool. Yeah. What do you think?
I think they did pretty well. I think they did as well, if not better, than could be expected from this trade. I mean, Andrew Brand, who used to work for the Packers, is now kind of a sports business guru. He said all along he thought the Packers had the leverage in this situation because they have their quarterback on the roster, and the Jets had pretty much said, we want Rodgers, and there was no second option. They didn't say, oh, maybe we'll look at Lamar Jackson, who, by the way, just re-signed with the Ravens today.
Yeah.
They didn't even feign interest in anybody else. They said, Rodgers is our guy. So when you do that, you give away your leverage.
That's right. Maybe the Jets screwed this up a little bit. I think that's fair. I would say the Packers won in the context of the religious fervor with which the NFL holds draft picks.
Yeah.
Which that's just the way it is, and maybe they're right about that. But whatever. But yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, now let's go to the next thing. The Rodgers era in Green Bay. Do you guys feel like they got as much as they could have out of it? They didn't get as much as they could have out of it. No, but how do you feel about it, E.T.? What do you feel about did the Packers maximize or come close to what they could have been with this great talent at the most important position on the field?
Close, but not anywhere near what they should have. And, that's the problem when you win so early in a guy's career. I mean, he was in, his third year as a starter when they won.
Yeah.
And you could see it building. I mean, even like in 2008 when he took over, I think they lost every one of their games by like less than 9 points or something like that. There was some astronomical number where they were so close in every single game. Mm-hmm. And even like in the 2010 season when they lost, that team didn't reach its full potential in the regular season. I mean, they were getting beat by teams like the Vikings and, teams that they should have never lost to. They struggled with a Bears team at the end of the year. That was, okay defensively, but I mean, they still had Jay Cutler, a quarterback. So even like in seasons where they won in 2010, I don't think they met their potential. Now, part of it is he had to drag some guys over the finish line after people like Greg Jennings left and Donald Driver left.
Yeah.
But, they had tons of talent, and for whatever reason, he just could not in some of those bigger games, even against the Bears in 2010 when they won the Super Bowl. He played awful in the NFC title.
He really did.
And just epic, epic. epic failures at times, and you know, no more. I mean, that Seattle loss still stings.
Ooh,
the Tampa loss is up there. Should have never lost to San Francisco a couple of years ago at home like they did, and you know, they never fully got over that mountain. I think they set the bar a little too high for themselves. That's not their fault. You want to win, but you know, they just, for whatever reason, could never get back over that hump again.
I have this weird theory. I have a lot of theories, but here's one. Particularly that cerebral athletes that maybe are very thoughtful human beings and almost have an intellectual bent a little bit, or are almost anal about the details kind of thing. Those people have their moments in the clutch where that is a negative.
Yeah.
Mike Schmidt was that guy.
Mm.
I think Peyton Manning was that guy to an extent.
Yeah.
Was Rodgers that guy?
It almost seems like it. Yeah. These especially these last couple years when they lost to Tampa, lost to San Francisco, and it was, you know, a play here, a play there, and really the offense underperformed in both those games.
Yeah, and it seems like I don't think there's been a big drop off in his physical talent.
No. I mean, hard to say.
Physically hurt.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how he does this year because, you know, how hurt was he this past year? He had the rib thing, and I think there was a knee thing in there, and he didn't have a good year. And whether that was because he physically couldn't do it or because, you know, he decided he wasn't going to go to mini camp and familiarize himself with a new receiving core, you know, I'll be curious to see how he does this year with that as a backdrop.
I think the interesting juxtaposition, and it's ironic that it's from another Wisconsin athlete. Look at Giannis Antetokounmpo last night when they asked him about the season of failure.
Yeah.
And you know, Barkley and Shaq on the Inside the NBA show got into it last night, and Barkley's like, you know, yeah, okay, you know, if you play 10 seasons and you win 3 of them, you won in those seasons. Is it a failure if you don't win every year? I mean, I kind of think it is when you're that level.
I think so.
I mean,
Well, I think if you lose in 5 games in the second round to a what has for 6 months been a pretty bad NBA team, that's a failure. The details matter a little.
Yeah, I mean, normally I don't agree with anything Shaq says, but he said Giannis isn't a failure, but the season is a failure, and I think that's how you have to look at it. When you're when you're the one seed and you lose like that. I mean, granted, Giannis missed 2 games and like 11 minutes in another game.
Yeah.
But again, to equate this with Rodgers, I think there's a point to be made there. Yeah, I mean, they were the one seed 2 years in a row, and they lost in the conference championship game the 1 year, and in just a horrifying way, I thought, in a lot of ways. And then the San Francisco game was just such a joke. They went right down the field in the first possession and never scored another offensive touchdown.
How about this one, guys? Is he the best quarterback in Green Bay Packers?
That
history?
Is a tough call.
Yeah.
ET, where are you at with that?
I hate to say if we're going to measure it on pure championships, then obviously the answer is no. But if you have to put everything around it, and, you know, Starr was good. But remember, those teams, too, were, like, loaded with
their
Mitch
defense.
And Willie Davis and Willie Wood and Herb Adderley and – offensively, he had great weapons, like even Max McGee when he was hungover in the Super Bowl, great weapon.
Yeah.
You know, they had great running backs. I mean, he was more historically of a game manager, and that was a complete team. So if we're talking about championships, obviously no, but I mean, all respect to my guy growing up Favre, I don't think it's close between Rodgers and the other two, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think Rodgers is one.
I think so. I mean, the thing that made me crazy about Favre was just how loose he was with the ball. I go back to
the other team too much.
Yeah, the one playoff game against the Rams where he threw 5 interceptions. It was just ridiculous.
Matt McGloin-esque.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that. I tend to lean Rodgers because Favre might have had a better arm. Might. I mean, it's close. Rodgers is right there just in terms of physical talent. And the fact that he seldom turned the ball over, that's what I always liked about him.
Yeah, I would say this about Bart Starr. He's perceived as a game manager, and I understand that, but he ranks really well in the advanced metrics. Now, part of that is the team they had, mm-hmm. where people had to so respect the running game and that offensive line and their defense that when he threw it, he was usually stretching the field and he was fairly effective. So stats like yards per attempt, he was really good at that, especially for that era.
You know what you never heard, though, about, and maybe it did to a degree with Favre when he was kind of younger and careless, but I remember reading something about those Packers teams, and I think it was the second Super Bowl winner, so Super Bowl II.
Yeah.
And Starr had started out the season like incredibly bad, and some of the starters wanted him benched. I mean, think about that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Yeah, okay.
If they do that, do they end up winning the second Super Bowl? Yeah, to me, nobody's ever said bench Rodgers. Now, Gordy and I have had discussions like Kirk and stuff, like it's time to pull him and, you know, all that. But in Favre, it's like, my God, I wanted the punch drunk guy, you know, up there every time taking swings. I never wanted that guy on the bench. So I think there's a little bit of separation. Again, no disrespect to Starr. He's one of the greatest ever, but, you know, I just don't think in terms of talent, in terms of what he does with a football, to me, it's not even close between those three.
Yeah, but going back to what Mike asked earlier about just the whole Rodgers era, it does leave you a little bit empty that they only won one Super Bowl his entire time there. What was it, 15?
Never got back to another one.
Never got back to one, which I guess...
And if that doesn't change, that's going to impact the way he's perceived historically.
I suspect it will. I mean, they never even got back to one. I mean, as E.T. mentioned, 2014, that was the chance. That Seattle game, I mean, ugh.
Don't get it started.
Gordy's, I think, heard this story one too many times, but I actually had to watch the end of that game on my phone at a Lewis Black show at Hershey.
Oh, my God.
And so imagine, you know, I'm driving down to the Hershey Theater, like, listening to this game on the radio and everything, and God love my poor mom who went to the show with me, and she's sitting there with me just not saying a word the whole time. And when Seattle caught that touchdown pass in overtime, I let out a word I won't repeat during this podcast, and another media member in Harrisburg had, during an intermission, had come up the aisle, and he goes, E.T., I thought I heard you earlier.
The unmistakable dulcet tones of E.T. watching the Packers.
There's so many plays in that game. The fake field goal to Gary Gilliam from my alma mater and from Penn State.
Oh, Gary Gilliam.
And the fumbled onside kick. And the one that I kind of go back to is... They played great defense that day. They intercepted Russell Wilson, was it four or five times?
I think five. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of them was by Morgan Burnett, and he might have scored, except Julius Peppers is going, fall down, which he did, but he might have scored and ended the game right there, you know? And because all he had was fat guys in front of him.
Why was he saying fall down?
I guess it was just
kill
like,
the clock.
Yeah, kill the clock. Kill you know, the clock. We got this one. We're, you know,
cause oh,
it,
okay.
Because it did feel like for 55 minutes they were in command of the game, and they were. And then, well, the other thing is Mike McCarthy. That don't get me started.
Oh, mama! I vowed not to mention the word Dom Capers during this podcast, and now I just did.
And you know that's the other side of the equation, though, is it all on him that they failed in some of these spots? And the answer is no.
Right.
Rodgers didn't play great in some of those games, but. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly you can't put it all on him. I mean, their defense in 2010 when they won the Super Bowl with Woodson and Matthews, those guys, they were lights out. I watched the last regular season game of the year from that season against the Bears.
Oh, my God.
Where they won 10-7.
Yep.
And they had nothing offensively, but from the third quarter on, their defense just completely took the Bears apart.
Yep.
And they handled their business against Atlanta. They were good against the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
They were great against the Bears in the title game. But, you know, is it Rodgers' fault that nobody tackled Colin Kaepernick?
No, it's not. And that's how these things are. There's always, you know, more to this story. Yeah. I mean, you know, history is going to say, back to Peyton Manning, history is going to say he's got two Super Bowls, but the last one was...
The defense carried him. Especially in the Super Bowl itself.
I mean, he was really a shell of his former self.
He took to Jordan Norwood in that game. Remember Jordan Norwood? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. Returning Super Bowl history. Yeah.
State College High School.
That's right.
The little Lions.
So here's a question, you see. What's your favorite Rodgers throw of all time? Non-Hail Mary. Non-Hail Mary.
Oh, non-Hail Mary. Well, then I can't even.
Non-Hail Mary. Boy. So, I'll give you like four right off
yeah,
the top.
Yeah, I have four. I have four as well.
Not in any order.
Uh-huh.
But the one that clinched the Super Bowl when he threw it to Jennings
was
nobody was knocking that pass down.
That's on my list.
The second one. Remember the year they beat Dallas in the playoffs, and obviously, well, the Jared Cook, you know, throw and catch and all that's on this list too. But the year after that, they went back down there in the regular season,
mm-hmm.
and he threw a fade to the corner to Davante Adams. That was
yeah.
And he had overthrown him on the play before, and they went right back to the exact same play, and he put it literally in his hands where nobody else was going to get it. That was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
That so was there's a good three, one. And honestly, the fourth one. And this isn't I'm surprised more people don't talk about this, but I think it's because of what it ultimately led to. The 4th and 8 throw against Chicago.
Ah, that's a good one. Yeah, well, John Kuhn saved his butt.
He did.
I remember that one, right?
He had been hurt. Missed a whole bunch of time in that year.
Yep.
And I think that was the first game that he had come back at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
What, like first or second. And, I mean, he was not 100% at all.
No, he was not.
If that first hits him, he's probably done for a while. So, yep. I mean, Kuhn does bail him out. But, man, he put that thing perfectly to Cobb. And
yeah.
I think that gets magnified in my family because my uncle was a diehard Bears fan. I hate the Bears. You know, it's kind of like one of those things. But.
Yeah, so, the Jennings one, that's definitely on my list because Ike Taylor got, like, a cuticle on that, and Jennings still caught it, and that was a 3rd and 10 play when they were kind of struggling at the end of the game. The one to Jared Cook is on my list. I really like that one. And then there was one, do you remember the one against the Eagles? It was a touchdown pass to Davante Adams where he kind of, like, put it through the DB's hands?
Yes.
That's a good one. And the other one is another one against the Eagles where they're backed up on their goal line and Devontae ran like a deep slant and between the two safeties.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one.
I remember that one. Yeah.
He had another, and you know, some of his throws, like when you think about the down and distance and
right.
you know, the Hail Marys, you kind of get a little lucky and stuff. But if you want to count the Giants one at the end of the half in the playoffs as a Hail Mary, fine. But he dropped that right in the bucket too. I think it was Cobb who caught that.
It was Cobb.
But he threw one against the Bears, and I don't remember if it was a third down or what down it was, but it was towards the end of the game, and they were tied.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson. Yeah.
And it set him up, and they ended up winning the game. And it's like he had this, like, precision, and everybody talks about his, like, Mike, you said it earlier, like the cerebralness of him and everything, but if you get down to, like, the crux of it, he's a gunslinger, too. He's, like, far.
Yeah, that's
He's more efficient, but he's totally a gunslinger.
That's a really good point. That's where he differs from Manning, as great as I thought Manning was. He wasn't that. Yeah, that's a good call. Let's see, a couple more topics. Two more topics here that I want to get to. Not necessarily. But Rodgers is only going to be making $1.16 million next year, and they have this ridiculous contract that's only probably temporary, so that in 2024 they will have, if the contract under the current contract, they'll have a $71 million cap hit for Favre. But this year it's only going to be tiny.
You mean the Jets will have that?
The Jets. The Jets will have a $71.2 million.
God love them.
Cap hit. I think they're probably going to rework it again. But anyway, do you think the Jets have enough to parlay this into really making something happen? Maybe not winning the Super Bowl, getting close.
It depends on what version they have of him. I mean, they have a pretty good team. They have a good defense.
I guess maybe that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, but their offensive line is suspect. They have some good backs. They have some good receivers. But their offensive line, I think, is kind of a question mark.
Bullish on the Jets, E.T.
So, yeah, I do agree with Gordy. I mean, if Mekhi Becton is if he drops, you know, the size of a small village and can actually be an effective offensive lineman, then that's going to go a long way to helping him. But, you know, my question mark with them would be Breece Hall's health. You know, he got hurt, you know, relatively early in the season. So, I mean, that's, you know, that should help him get healthy. I don't know if they kept James Robinson. I don't think they did, but that was a solid pickup if they needed a back. Michael Carter was good last year when they leaned on him a little bit. I mean, they have a talent. I think Garrett Wilson's going to become like the next Chase or Jefferson Adams type guy in the NFL myself. But
he's pretty good.
Here's the two questions I have about them. Number one, what is his motivation if they say either don't make the playoffs or if they go like 9-8 or like 10-7 and get in, and then they lose in the first round to a team like, you know, let's throw Jacksonville out or somebody like a team on the come up, or if they run into like the Bengals or a Kansas City or something. What's his motivation for next year? Is the fire still there? Two, how are they navigating that division? Because, you know, you still got Buffalo who's there, and Buffalo's got arguably one of the top three, four quarterbacks in the entire league. Top four, three or four players in the entire league, I think.
I think their roster is good. I think Buffalo's roster.
I think so too.
They've had a couple subtractions, like Emmanuel Sanders.
They have,
He's not there, but you know. But then, you know, Miami. I mean, I know we talk about Tua's health and stuff. Miami was in the playoffs last year, so you know how do they navigate that? You still got Belichick. You know, he'll figure something out. They bring back Bill O'Brien as an offensive coordinator. Hopefully, help Mac Jones out. Maybe they get something out of him. Where are they in that division? Like, I don't think it's this all of a sudden their team to me is not as ready to go as it was when Favre went there. Because remember, Favre goes there, and like right away they were one of the best teams in the AFC until he got hurt late.
He got hurt,
And then obviously he exits stage left and Sanchez gets into an AFC title game. But if they don't get to an AFC title game, It's AFC, at least AFC title game or bust for the team. I mean, I don't know if they get to a Super Bowl, but they have to get to a championship game. You have to get to the point where you're there, knock on the door. You know, maybe he has a different mindset in the game. Maybe Robert Saleh, you know, he trusts Robert Saleh a little bit more when it comes to a defense getting a stop. But I think they have to get to an AFC title game, and I don't think they will this year, but I think that has to be their end game this year for this thing to be a success, especially if he only plays one year.
Yeah, that's the thing. But that may help determine whether he plays more than 1 year. Now the other thing I wanted to get to is Jordan Love. Love is in the air, fellas.
Love is all you need, man.
Yeah, love is all you need. That's a better one.
Yeah. Overlove, guys. Yeah.
I think he's going to be okay. And I think they're going to, I mean, they still have a pretty good offensive line. They have two really good backs. Aaron Jones, I think, is a terrific back. And their young receivers, you know, I think are going to progress between year one and year two. That'd be Christian Watson and Romeo Dubs. And, you know, who knows, maybe they draft the Ohio State kid tonight, which would really amuse the hell out of me if they drafted a wide receiver in the first round, something they never did while Rodgers was there.
Yeah. The irony,
That would be ironic. But, you know, here's the other thing. I mean, you know, Matt LaFleur comes in as the coach, and he, of course, has one philosophy of offense. Rodgers, of course, has this other idea. Now I think at least the quarterback and the head coach will be on the same page.
Okay.
I mean, we've talked about this, E.T. What's your take?
Yeah.
I think that this is it. He will excel because LaFleur has been planning for this moment since they drafted him. I think they had an eye on him.
Yep.
You know, he wanted to have his own guy. LaFleur also knows too that he's got to be on his A game because now he doesn't have an MVP, a two-time MVP on him right now. So we got to see that he's, you know, he's ready to really cement himself as a great coach too. To me, and you know, some people are going to listen to this after the first round. They have to go wide receiver in the first round of the draft. I mean, I'd feel better if they had a vet, but you know, they have those two guys that you mentioned, Gordy. I'm not so much worried about the tight end situation because I think there's depth. You know, Zach Kuntz or somebody later in the draft they can go after.
I think it's a good tight end draft.
It is, and you know, Tyler Davis is still there. He was pretty good when he played before he got hurt a couple times. So you pair a guy who, by all accounts, when he played last year, and actually I didn't think he played too bad against the Chiefs when he filled in for Rodgers 2 years ago. He wasn't quite ready, and the Chiefs threw basically zero blitz at him the whole time, you know, that whole zero blitz concept. But I think he's ready to go, and I think that he catches those receivers, those two at the right time.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Receivers are such a position in the NFL that if you get one in the first round or first couple rounds, those guys can step in and they can make an impact right away.
They certainly have in recent years. Think about the guy on the Bengals And the guy on the Eagles. I mean, yeah, and there's a half a dozen other ones. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah.
I mean, so I think you have to go, like, if they could get, like, Jackson, Smith, and Jigba from Ohio State.
Yep, that's the guy.
That's the guy I want.
That's the guy I want, too.
Yeah, if he's there, I think they have to take him. Quentin Johnson might be somebody else. But
I mean,
they have to get somebody that is going to be able to step in and help that team right away. I think they just need to put the weapons around them because – you know, we can talk about, like, Lazard, is he really, like, a number one wide receiver? No. Cobb is old. Some of these other guys they had. But you're taking a ton of experience away in that offense from, you know, from the quarterback. And even if those guys were still there and there was no Rodgers, I would probably feel a little bit better about Love just because of the experience of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like, you know, I'm a diehard New York Rangers fan. It's kind of like having the kid line. Like, you just get all these young guys, put them out there, and, you know, if they go 6-10 – maybe they're an explosive 6-10, and maybe next year they're 10-6 or 10-7, whatever.
I suspect that's how it's going to go. That they're going to have a season like you mentioned, that 2008 season. I was just looking at that, by the way. I have it on the screen, and they lost. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games by 4 points or fewer, and this is.
And had the ball.
Yeah.
I think to possibly win the game in like 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah, so that was their so I suspect it'll be that kind of season this coming season for the Packers where they're just a little too young and they can't get out of their own way. But I do think that Love will be okay. I mean, think about this. Love was drafted ahead of Jalen Hurts. I don't think he'll be better than Jalen Hurts, but I mean, people regarded him pretty highly coming out of college. This is, you know, he has some physical ability and against the Eagles last year, I thought he played pretty well. I mean, granted, the game was getting away from him anyway. They couldn't stop him at all. But he made some throws.
He threw punches.
Yeah.
He threw some punches out. And listen, again, you go back to that second-round pick that the Packers get.
Yep.
If Rodgers plays in 65% of those snaps, and I would assume that he will, barring injury, but I would assume he will, and he goes to a first-round pick, they got 2 first-round picks. If they really want to get, like, Caleb Williams, they got the collateral to try to move up and get him.
Then that would be
boy. Not the answer.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, this is a question actually for both of you. If Rodgers and Tom Brady had switched positions at some point in their career where Rodgers has the infrastructure that Brady had, does he win 6 Super Bowls with New England? Or do he and Belichick butt heads for 15 years? You know?
Yeah. That is really a question.
He's got 3 or 4, I think.
I think so.
The team around Brady.
He's got more than one.
Yeah, he's certainly got more than one. Because Belichick, you know, he's defense is his forte. So he would have figured they would have been much more stout. And, you know, Rodgers wouldn't have had to take some of the chances he ultimately had to take with the Packers. You know?
No, and Brady had such a super – how many times did you watch a Brady game? Like, Gordy, we watched an NFC title game a couple of years ago. Mm. And, like, they have the ball before the half, and all I can think about is, oh, God, they're probably going to score before the half, and we're in trouble. Like, every time the guy had the ball in his hands.
Yep.
And part of that was that Belichick's, you know, his scheme, his defense, their offensive scheme and all that, it put Brady in those positions to excel.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a different... You know, I mean, let's be honest here. I'm not putting Mike McCarthy in Bill Belichick's class any day of the week. So I think there's a different mindset. If those two had flopped spots, Rodgers, he's easily got 2 or 3.
That's really interesting to think about. I mean, if they literally changed positions, Brady would not have 6.
No,
right? If they literally switched to team situations for their whole career, Brady would not have 6.
No.
But that's not really what we're talking about.
Have 2 or 3, though.
Yeah, probably. I guess. So yeah, good. That's interesting, but there's no bottom to it. That's really an interesting question. Well, I was expecting much more psychiatry, but you both seem mentally and emotionally fairly healthy.
Well, we've talked about this a lot over the last several months and years.
It was just
obviously sort of time. Yeah. So, there was obviously a lot of weird twists and turns these last several months with the darkness retreat and all that crap. I could live without that.
That's what I'm saying. I thought this podcast was going to be something of a darkness retreat.
I could turn off the lights if you like.
But Corey, you probably agree with me on this, though. There's a big difference between when Favre left, that team was ready to win a Super Bowl if he comes back. Like that team, I think.
Yeah, probably so.
You know,
that's interesting. Yeah, okay.
And this team, you know, as we've seen now, obviously last year wasn't quite ready. Part of that is on Rodgers for not doing the OTA thing.
And, I thought so.
You know, not having Adams and all that. But I think it's a little bit easier for Packers fans to take when the team isn't primed. Like, I was pissed when they got rid of Favre.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Rodgers was going to be good. I was actually in Baltimore the night that he made his debut.
Mm-hmm.
His rookie season, ironically enough. But, like, I was fuming mad when they got rid of him because I thought you just went 13-3. You were one play away from winning the going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think they beat New England if they get there.
Wow.
But, is this team are they going to compete for a Super Bowl this year? If they compete for the division and it's week 12, I'd be happy at this point.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, and I don't think that's out of the realm. I mean, the division is not overall. It's better than it's been, but it's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll put it this way. I don't think the Lions are going to win it, and I would bet on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan Campbell is he seems like a good coach, but guys like that, you know, who are the rah-rah guys, that wears off.
That could wear off. That's right. That could wear off, although they were really playing well at the end of the year.
They were. They were. Mm-hmm. But
for the gambling joke there, I feel, you know, I mean, half their team gets suspended for gambling. I get nothing for that?
Jeez. I know. That. I'm sorry. My bad.
I don't know. Cannaboo. E.T., you have delivered the goods once again. Thanks for being with us.
All right,
us,
thanks.
Man.
Be well.
Be well. Stay in touch. All that stuff.
All right, take care. Be well. Right. E.T., the inimitable one.
He is the inimitable one.
Oh, the other thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about, I'll be curious to see how it works with Rodgers and the New York City media.
Yeah.
Because that's.
Oh, he was very happy. He was saying all the right stuff yesterday, boy.
Yes,
but
we'll see how it is when it's week 7 and, you know, they're, you know, 4-3. Is he going to be going on McAfee's show and saying, well, this guy ran the wrong route or, you know, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah. You don't know. But, you know, for an NFL quarterback, the media is an NFL quarterback is, as ridiculous as it sounds, is almost like a public official in the hometown.
That's fair.
So the quarterback is getting that
mm-hmm.
almost in any NFL city, mm-hmm. what many athletes get in New mm-hmm. York City.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be a gigantic change for him. And he's, who knows?
I'll really be curious about that because, you know, he's... He does this thing. I don't know if he still does it, but I know for a time he would actually bring a recorder up to the podium with him and record his own pressers so that if he was quoted out of context, something we both heard way too often, that he could actually bring the receipts. He would actually do that. I've actually been I was actually at pressers where he did that. I saw it for myself, and that was apparently common practice. I don't know if he still did it at the end of his Packers career, but that was kind of interesting.
I didn't know that. I've never heard that before. That's interesting. Yeah.
So I wonder if that's still a thing, but that was kind of curious to me that he went to those extremes to make sure that you know, his words were interpreted or recorded correctly.
You know, the NFL and sports are more interesting with him there than with him not there. He's an interesting dude.
He is.
And I mean, I've been kind of annoyed with him at times, but, you know.
I mean, I've said this before on this pod. To me, there's two guys I enjoy watching more than any other. One is Steph Curry, and the other one is Rodgers when Rodgers, you know, I don't know if he's still Rodgers, but when he has it going on, those guys, they just do things you just don't see.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You just
that's
don't
right.
see.
They are really different and unique, and I think Steph is more of a, more influentially, I mean, I think he's changed the way basketball is played.
In some cases, for the worse, because everybody thinks they can shoot from 30 feet, and including, like, younger players.
Yeah.
You know, and then,
yeah, not everybody can do it, but they all try to do it. But I think they're somewhat missing what the real genius of Steph is. It's not just shooting. There's more to it than that.
No, anyway. What I really hope that they do is absorb just about how... conditioning is obviously huge. You're moving with the ball, moving without it. His work rate is off the charts.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing I wish everybody would absorb is that he's I think he's one of the great teammates that maybe we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put Bill Russell probably at the top of that list.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Curry's in the top 10 somewhere.
Certainly in the top 10. Yeah. He's certainly in the top 10. Duncan would be another guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean, he would be another one.
Julius would be in there.
Yeah.
But to me, the fact that he takes such joy in how everybody else is doing beside himself is just, I love that. I love that about him.
Yeah.
I really do.
It seems like a really genuine thing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, well, should we talk about where you are in the NBA playoffs now, or should we segue into that?
Let's segue into the NBA.
Okay,
NBA
well, the Warriors beat Sacramento last night. They've won the last three games after they lost the first two, so they're up 3-2 going home on Friday night to try to close that out, and they would play, presumably, the Lakers, who are up 3-2 on Memphis and looking to close them out.
Yep.
The other Western semi is set. Denver is going to play Phoenix, and it's sort of the same situation. Well, it's not quite the same situation in the East. The three series are over in the East. The Heat and the Knicks are going to play each other. The Heat beat Milwaukee, which was, we mentioned that, the eighth seed Heat beat the...
That is an unbelievable upset.
Yeah,
that is so uncharacteristic of the history of the NBA.
Yep, six times it's happened. Eight is beat one.
But I mean, six times it happened, but not in every one was it a team that you would argue was the best team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami was statistically the worst offensive team in the NBA this year.
Yeah.
And now... That was with regular season Jimmy Butler and not playoff Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler is out of his freaking mind right now.
And he's only scored 98 points in the last two games.
It's incredible. Yeah. And mostly with Drew Holiday trying to guard him.
One of the, Sixer on ex-Sixer crime occurring there.
There you go. I didn't think of that. That's right.
Yeah. But yeah. And they're without Tyler Hero. They're without Victor Oladipo. And
that's another thing. They're the worst offensive team in the regular season, and their best shooter is out. Now, again, Butler has been the best shooter on earth the last week. So,
but he can do that. Yeah. He can do that. That's Jimmy. That's what the Sixers gave away a couple years ago.
In lieu of Ben Simmons.
Hello. So, yes, there's a fearlessness about Jimmy that you just can't deny.
That's the best word, fearless. He really is. These playoffs have been unbelievable to me.
I know the first round is usually kind of pro forma, you know?
Yeah. The first round every year, this is what happens. Well, this is cool. The NBA playoffs. All right, this is fun. And then by this stage where we're at game 4, 5, 6, I'm like, who's winning this series?
Yeah.
Who's up? What's going on? Where are we? And, you know, you lose the thread of it because there's almost too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, you know, if you look back on it years later, you don't remember the first round. You don't remember anything about the first round.
No.
But this has been, I think it's been extraordinary. I never remember a better first round, but I don't remember the first round. So maybe that's why, but it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
some of the games. Yeah,
I mean the most recent one being the other night, Boston against Atlanta. Boston's leading in the fourth, and then all of a sudden they just kind of self-destruct. And then Trae Young makes three threes, the last of which 30 feet with a one-pointer left.
You got to guard him.
Yeah,
you got to guard him out there.
Yeah,
you got, even if it means overplaying him 35 feet from the basket, which sounds absurd because that's the game now.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world? This is really a rant of mine. I realize this stamps me as a basketball philistine, but I don't understand why NBA defenses don't attack more, don't disrupt more, don't try to get the ball out of the hands of these guys.
Of the guy.
Yes. Think about this. From game 4 of the Sacramento Golden State series, Steph Curry, one of the greatest players who ever lived, he's coming up the court. He gets, I thought, a fairly soft double team. Not a real, he could have back dribbled or spun dribbled out of that double team in his sleep. Mm-hmm. And he calls a timeout that he doesn't have. Yeah. This is one of the best, smartest basketball players we've ever seen. And that little bit of blitzing, you know. So then, after that, Sacramento has the ball last with the game on the line, and Fox is dribbling. He's being guarded by Draymond.
Yes.
There's a little switch. I guess I think maybe Harrison Barnes screened maybe or
yeah,
something.
He did.
And
yeah,
and they switched. So now he's dancing a little bit with Steph. Draymond comes over, doesn't blitz him, just comes over
just
and
walls him
like,
off.
Yeah, walls him off, exactly. Yeah. And he immediately gives the ball up.
Yeah.
Why don't they make these guys give the ball up?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I mean, it's a Jimmy Butler. I mean, he's scoring 56 on Milwaukee, a great defensive team. What are they doing?
Yeah. Not much.
I mean, not
enough.
Well, Milwaukee, they thought they had stockpiled perimeter defenders, and it turned out Joe Ingles isn't Joe Ingles anymore. It turned out Jay Crowder isn't Jay Crowder anymore. And it turned out that Jrue Holiday couldn't handle Jimmy on his own. And so that really is the crux of the matter. I mean, Jimmy probably got away with a push-off on the tying basket at the end of regulation in Game 5. But, you know, whatever. I mean, it still felt like Milwaukee. And the other thing about that game was Giannis missed 13 foul shots in that game. 13.
It's funny how it seems like the pressure of the playoffs, we see the flaws in players and teams. Mm-hmm. It seems like the pressure of the playoffs, particularly this year, has kind of exposed that.
Yeah.
I think we've talked on this show about how Giannis, God love him, you got to admire the fact that he keeps going and attacking the basket and going to the foul. Well, I mean, he missed most of the free throws he shot last night, and it really cost him. And same thing with the Celtics. The Celtics have some.
They stunned me. It seems like they're kind of flailing about their coach, Joe Mazzulla. He was a late hire after Ime Udoka got fired. But it seems like they're kind of flailing about what to do about their point guard spot for their in-game lineup, because they have Marcus Smart, they have Malcolm Brogdon, they have Derek White, and they don't quite know how to fill that one spot.
Yeah.
Because they have two really great players in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and they have a couple bigs who are pretty interchangeable, Al Horford, Rob Williams. But that spot seems to really be a problem as far
and then
as
there's times when Atlanta goes small, and they have the two bigs on the court, so that creates matchup problems,
right?
And Brogdon and Smart and White are all good. I think
so too.
It's almost like.
But it's something doesn't work. It's
like it would be easier if they only had two of those three or something. Yeah,
it's like you. It is true. You can have too many good players.
No doubt. Yeah. That is weird. And I don't. And the other thing is, I don't think Smart is quite what he was at his absolute peak defensively.
I agree with that.
And that makes it maybe more defensible to not have him out there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or again, if you're facing a team that's small, maybe having two of those three guys out there at the same time, which I guess they do that. They do that sometimes. Yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal. I still think the Celtics are really good.
I still think they win the series. They probably win it tonight, as we're on a Thursday night here. They play again tonight, so I wouldn't be stunned to see them close it out in Atlanta. But, you know, I wouldn't be stunned to see it go. I mean, what Trae Young shot did the other day, which is it bought Joel Embiid 2 days of rest for his knee, because it was the series would have started on Saturday. Now it's going to start on Monday, presumably against Boston.
And apparently this Embiid injury is going to be a thing going forward. On the other hand, we all this stuff that we've just been talking about, the Sixers have the least recently accumulated scar tissue of any of these teams, right?
Part of that is
they played Brooklyn, who was not going to threaten them.
No.
But to just cruise into the second round is... that's good. That is an unqualified good thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to read this into it, I guess you can. There was a quote from Doc Rivers today worrying that maybe they were getting too much rest. Well, I don't know if you can get too much rest.
No, that's Doc being a coach.
Yeah, of course.
And,
it is.
And that's fine.
But I honestly, what I saw of Boston, just their ability to self-destruct, and you know, from what people tell me, that's not the first time late game has gotten away from. That actually makes me look at the series against the Sixers a little differently. Because I thought Boston's going to beat them in like five games. But I don't really think that anymore.
And if you look at the last couple of years, it seems to me that in each series that the Celtics have had the last couple of years, Tatum has had one or two games where he wasn't Tatum. And most of the time, Brown, it seems like those two pick each other up, kind of.
Yeah, they do.
But not always. I mean, you can't rely on that every single time out.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how...
It is funny.
Maybe a week from now, the Sixers will look vulnerable.
In a way
that we don't anticipate. Much changes.
It's interesting because there was somebody mentioned the other day about how George Niang, one of the Sixers' key reserves, it's like his numbers against Boston are just terrible, his shooting numbers. Mm. And then there's the thing of who does he guard?
Who does he guard on their team?
There's nobody.
He might not play much in that series.
I think you could argue that he shouldn't.
That might be a good idea to not play him much.
Yeah.
He really is just a shooter almost.
Yeah.
And I'm not killing him. He's a pro.
He's a good player.
He's been a good piece for them. I don't dislike him at all. But it's hard. He's the one guy on the Sixers, out of the guys who are rotational at all,
mm-hmm.
that you wonder, man, maybe he takes a real backseat in this series.
Yeah, I don't know who would get his minutes, but I'm not sure you can trust him to guard anybody on Boston's team.
I think Tucker, on the other hand, has been pretty good lately.
He's a valuable guy.
He's helping him. Melton, he's good.
Yeah, I like him.
I think their role players are... okay,
from the moment they signed D'Anthony Melton, I thought that was a pretty good acquisition because he played pretty well for Memphis last year, and he can shoot it a little bit, he can guard, he can do a little bit of everything.
He's a very professional guard.
It's a good
NBA
piece.
Guard.
Really good piece for their team.
Yeah. So.
Okay, I had a couple notes from the West, too. Okay, Phoenix beat the Clippers 4-1, and Devin Booker, 37.2 points per game, but he played 43 minutes a game. Kevin Durant averaged 28.4, but he averaged almost 44 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And, you know, Durant has had an interesting year. He certainly has not been playing mm-hmm. as much. He doesn't have as much mileage on the clock this year, but lately he does. And
that's a heavy load. They just don't really have a bench.
That's their thing. Who are the role players that step forward for them,
mm-hmm.
But you talk about Durant and Booker, and I'm just astounded at the skill level.
Oh my God!
Right now, it's amazing. Just generally in the league, I mean, and Trae Young, I have, he's very flawed, and he's a weird case in the sense that, like, if they would want to move him, like, you have to turn the keys of your team over to him if you're going to acquire him, and if you're not willing to do that, well then it doesn't make any sense to pay him the money that he makes.
No.
But I'm not sure you can win if you do that. But anyway, I'm really rambling. Sorry about that. But my point is, Fearless. He's another guy that's fearless.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has a lot of confidence, and he believes he's the best, baddest dude in the world.
You can't put a price on that.
It's value.
Especially at this time of year.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it looks to me, watching Golden State the other night, that they finally figured out their rotation.
Yeah.
That was sort of a hit and miss thing all year. Like, how much do you play the young guys? Well, I think Steve Kerr just said, I'm going to play the guys that I've won with before.
And part of that is, part of that is the way Draymond's playing right now.
And he's coming off the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the closing lineup, of course.
Yeah.
But he's not starting.
That's right. That's right. He's not starting. And now the other guy that I still think they have to get really going is Wiggins. If you remember the role he played last year in the playoffs.
He was valuable.
And down the end, he was huge for them. And I just haven't seen that this year. He was pretty good the other night. And one of their other wins in this series, I can't remember when, I thought he was starting to come on.
Yeah, he missed a bunch of time. Like, it was a personal thing.
Yeah, he did.
Like 20-some games. But, I mean, he's really going to be important in the Lakers, because I'm thinking he'll probably end up guarding LeBron at least some of the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that they're starting to – you got to give them credit. I thought they had no shot. And they look like they're starting to figure it out. And, I mean, Draymond had 21 points last night.
Yeah.
Looney had 22 rebounds.
He's a very valuable guy.
He is excellent.
Yeah.
And he is excellent in that very limited role that they have for him. And Thompson got off a little bit last night, and they didn't shoot the three well.
No, Curry was 2 for 10, but he did score 31.
Yeah, he was 2 for 10, and one of them he banked in.
Yeah.
And one of the ones he made, he banked in.
No, he couldn't make a
but
three.
But then he was tremendous at the end, and he's great. He's just a great, great basketball player.
Yeah, I think they've kind of figured it out. But I think those are two terrific series, though. Denver, Phoenix, and probably Golden State and the Lakers. I think those are really good series. I mean, I
think the series that are going on now, I think that Sacramento-Golden State series has been incredible to watch.
Yeah,
I couldn't stay up late enough to stay till the end last night, but...
Yeah, at the very end, Curry had a play where he kind of was like dribbling clock, and he just sort of like weaved his way around, and then, I guess I'll just lay this in and get fouled and end the game, basically.
It almost looked like when he like ducked in, it almost looked like he was going to shoot a little scoop, and he kind of lost control of the ball a little bit, and couldn't go from here to here, and then he just spun around.
And I'll just end the game
here
right here.
Here we go.
We wanted to talk to you. You wrote a piece the other day about the U.S. Women's Open returning to Lancaster next May into June. It was last year in 2015, which was that was one of the quotes that really kind of interested me. One of the officials saying, you know, we keep on talking about it having been here last year, and it was 9 years ago, but you also talked about how it's going to have to be a little different just because Lancaster Country Club is a little different.
Yeah, the physical plant is a little different. They spent a lot of money on their facility there, and for example, the place where the press tent was 9 years ago, there is now a permanent building there, which is really pretty neat, and it's going to be a place where the players are going to be able to sort of hang out now. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the USGA has now taken over. They have a specific department that's player relations for these championships. So they're going to do a lot of the things. Some of the things that the volunteers did 9 years ago, the USGA now has full time people to do.
Okay.
Transporting them back and forth and creating stuff for them to do, and that's also, they have a gym there. They have like a fitness center building.
Yeah.
So the players will use that as a workout facility, which a lot of times they bring a sort of temporary, workout place on the property. And they have so much property that it's not going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but they're going to have to do some things differently. And they promised to do some things differently in terms of moving people around. There were places, you know, Lancaster Country Club is an old golf course. Mm-hmm. It's an old school golf course. It doesn't necessarily have these. It's not a golf stadium like some of these modern, like the place where the Players' Championship is held, to the Island Green that a lot of people have seen on television. It's not like that. So they have some issues there. But again, that's just logistical stuff. It's going to be a lot like it was 9 years ago.
And you said it was pretty well run when they did it 9 years ago.
It was well run. That record attendance, record raves from everybody.
I seem to remember you talking about it, how it was, and you had the attendance numbers in there, and it's right up there with any U.S. Women's Open that's ever been held, right?
Yeah, it was the record at the time. I'm not sure it still is for total attendance. We, meaning Lancaster newspapers, made an unbelievably big deal of it then, and I think we're going to try to do that again, even though we don't have as many people.
I was going to say, how many people did you have staffing that then? I don't remember.
I think we had something like 12 to 15 people credentialed, and everybody on our staff, it was really a good experience, and sort of gratifying in a way, because everybody on our staff did something, and I was impressed with what they did. Like, people who don't know anything about golf and don't like golf wrote a good story about golf. You know
what
I mean?
That's neat.
I thought it was great. I thought Chris Otto, our editor, did a great job of just organizing everything.
Right.
And here's what we're going to try to hit today. And here's, it was really a, a team concept thing. I don't want to get sappy about this, but it was really fun.
But you rose to the occasion, is what you're saying. That's nice.
And that's nice.
That's a good feeling when that happens. When there's an event in your backyard and you feel like you did what you
I think everybody had that feeling.
That's good.
I hope they did.
That's a great feeling. Yeah. A lot of early days, as I recall, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. But that was good. And it's probably not going to be exactly the same because the first time is the first time. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be, I think it could be a lot like it was then.
Yeah. That's cool. That's interesting. Yeah. The last little footnote I had written down here, which was, tonight is the NFL draft, and by the time a lot of people hear this, they will know what has happened. But it's interesting to me that Will Levis, a guy who was at Penn State before transferring to Kentucky, is projected as, at worst, a top 10 pick and maybe a top 5 pick. Meanwhile, we know what the vibe was with Penn State's quarterback during Sean Clifford's 12-year career at Penn State. It's impossible to say what was going on behind the scenes, but do you feel like Levis might have ever done what he's ultimately done as a college player there, or would that have never happened for him there?
Oh, I think it could have happened for him.
Oh, really? You think it could have happened?
Maybe not. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you look at his actual performance and his actual numbers, he hasn't been that successful in Kentucky. I mean, he's done well. I think he's a draftable player, mostly because of his body and his size.
I was going to say, they're drafting a lot of potential.
When he first played at Penn State, he played because Clifford got hurt.
At Ohio State.
Yeah. It was Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. He was running around, bouncing off of people. It was almost entirely in the running game. Mm-hmm. The next week, I can't even remember who they played the next week.
Might have been Iowa.
It might have been. But anyway, now he's got to execute the passing game. And it was clear that he was not even at the remedial level. Mm-hmm. At least it was clear to me. I'm not downing the kid or anything. That's how it looked to me. Mm-hmm. And he goes to Kentucky and they don't really throw the ball that much. Everybody says, well, he's been in a pro style offense. Yeah, but he's been in a pro style offense that didn't feature the quarterback. Is that not a little bit of a yellow flag? I mean, it is to me.
Interesting.
I was just looking at his numbers today. I'm looking at his NCAA stats.
Interesting.
In pass attempts and completion percentage. I mean, 19 touchdown passes and 10 interceptions, and below average nationally in terms of passing yards, in terms of passing attempts. I don't know.
That's really interesting. That's an interesting take on it because I mean. It seems like every year there's a handful of guys that get drafted on potential and body type being a specific one. So, yeah, there
it
is. I mean,
if he becomes the guy in Buffalo, which I think some people think he's going to be, then I will be as wrong as I've ever been about any athlete. Although a close second would be Jalen Brunson.
Ooh.
There are no words for how wrong I was about him.
Second round draft pick, and now he's as good as
he
gets.
I just didn't think he was athletic enough.
Well,
man, was I wrong.
He's a damn good player.
He is a great. I mean, he's even better than I thought he would be a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, once he got to the Knicks, I'm blown away by him.
Yeah, so anyway. There's a series with some historical implications. The Knicks against the Heat in the next round. That has some echoes.
Oh, yeah. Pat Riley will be looking on. And Alonzo mourning at his side.
but at any rate, the whole Levis thing is one of the curiosities to me going into this draft, you know?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I understand this Anthony Richardson from Florida.
Yeah, sort of the same thing.
I understand the intrigue with him because he is off the charts freakish athlete and really inexperienced and has not played in a pro system. So you think, well, there's gigantic upside with this guy. I can understand being intrigued by him. Maybe a team like the Jets, which is thinking, you know, okay, yeah, 3 years from now, we have a guy ready.
That would make a lot of sense.
I think it does.
I mean, getting back to that, I mean, the Packers a couple years ago traded up to draft Jordan Love. And because Rodgers, the couple years going up to that, had not played that great.
Yeah, yeah.
And And then that sparked Rodgers to win back-to-back MVPs because he was so ticked off about it. Which was, you know, and in the meantime, he's sitting there for 3 years as Rodgers was behind Favre. The parallels between the Favre to the...
Oh, yeah. And crazy.
It's just everything is... the last, right down to the last pass each of them threw as Packers was an interception, which is kind of funny to me. and along the way they both got inklings of how their successor would be because they got hurt. You know, Rodgers against the Cowboys years ago, Jordan Love against the Eagles this past year. It's like, well, maybe we got something here, you know, and that sort of has led, and both ended up getting traded to the Jets. It's the parallels are unbelievable.
But I mean, when they took Jordan Love and the way under the circumstances they took him, to me, Richardson for the Jets would be less of a reach.
Yeah.
Given the circumstances.
You know, I mean, Rodgers is 39. You know, it's probably 3 years max. Max. Absolutely.
I'd be thrilled if I was Richardson with that pick.
That's a great situation. Yeah, because you know that your time is coming. Yeah. It's just a matter of when. I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, so he's the guy that, to me, if you're going to go way upside on a quarterback, he would be the one.
Although the Jets are probably, they and the Packers flip-flop picks. The Packers have 13, the Jets have 15. I mean, and maybe they take an offensive lineman.
Given all the needs, I'm not saying.
But I think there's like an argument could be made. Like, wait, maybe we should have a developmental quarterback here, and like let's figure it out. But maybe they figure Zach Wilson is that developmental quarterback. Maybe they're still not going to give up on him.
There have been reports that everybody in that building is down on him. I don't know.
Well, he kind of dug his own grave with some of the things he said last year. Yeah. But yeah, I agreed. But it is interesting. I mean, the draft, there's always sort of a Christmas Eve feel about the draft.
Oh, yeah, like, I love the draft.
I do, too. Yeah. You know, I can't get enough of mock drafts. Mock drafts are like my little addiction.
So many people like, oh, here's Mel's latest mock draft.
I love mock drafts.
I love it. It's the process. I mean, I guess that's why we've been doing this shit for 40 years. Yeah. We're endlessly fascinated by the process.
Yes. Yeah. So on that note, I think we made it to the finish line.
We did.
A programming note. Next week, Paul Shirley, who played basketball in a number of countries and in a number of leagues, including the NBA, he's since become an author, and we're going to talk to him about his latest book, which is actually about a rock band, a fictional rock band. But I read the book. It's quite good. Paul's a really talented writer, and he's a really interesting guy to talk with. So we look forward to having Paul on next week.
Excellent. It's Gordy and Mike. We'll see you.
See you later.